Welcome to the Floor Chasey Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, August the 7th, and I'm recording at 10:18 p.m., and that is British summer time here in sunny London. Okay, so this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, and I will start with stock markets. And the main point I think to mention here is that we're in this difficult unseasonal period in the year, period of seasonal underperformance, I should say. And that, of course, is the May through October period overall. It's when you're more likely, on average, to get underperformances. We've seen a lot of nervousness, a lot of choppy volatility overall. We've seen some cyclical bear markets in some of the emerging markets, and we've got Wall Street, well, losing upside momentum, not least in terms of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, although transports had preceded the Dow to the downside some time ago. Now, in terms of overall influences on markets, the most important one in this environment is the quantitative easing, and that we have from Japan in a very big way. We also have it from the European Central Bank in a very big way, and those are leading to some outperformance recently. Japan for quite some time, and Europe more recently, once they got past the Grexit period, for, well, they aren't permanently past the Grexit problem by any means, but it's on the sidelines here right now, or at least off the front pages of newspapers. And so that's helping Europe. And then the most feared market, perhaps, of any consequence in terms of size, is China. But China is throwing a lot of money at its market. People are appalled when they look at what's been going on in this command economy with its command some heavily managed stock market. But if they were withdrawing capital, it would be a big problem. If they're pumping money in, I think I'd give that the benefit of the doubt. Here is my overall view. Wall Street overdue for that 10% plus correction, that's for sure. And are we going to see it over the next 3 months or so? We could very easily. We know it's something that could be caused by dollar strength. It could also be caused by valuations overall. It could also be caused by just a certain amount of loss of optimism that that we're seeing. We're certainly getting some very sharp rotational corrections, knocking down some high performing sectors and shares. I mean, Apple was the biggest one, of course, and Apple breaking down beneath its rising 200-day moving average, and it has not been able to regain that upper ground, get back up above it, in other words. We've seen that very sharp fall in Disney. This has happened with a number of previously leading shares to the upside. But then on the other hand, we're also getting rotational moves. We're getting sub-shares that had previously lagged that are starting to do much better. And that's fairly positive as long as the overall breadth of the market is not deteriorating. And there are some concerns about that expressed by people, and I share some of those concerns overall. But what are the risks for Wall Street? Well, my feeling is that a 10% plus correction between now and the end of October could would hardly be a surprise if that occurred. It could very easily occur. Now, I do feel, though, that if we get beyond October, get into November, towards year end, and if we haven't seen that 10% plus correction, then it would take some special one-off event that is not known here right now to cause that big a downward reaction in the U.S. stock market. And furthermore, that once we get past October, then I think the cyclical factors that we see with U.S. presidential cycles will become increasingly influential. And they would be overall bullish. Now, the other factor there that's very much on people's minds is Fed policy and will they raise interest rates? Well, probably on the basis of today's jobs report. And so we probably get a rate hike in September. It would only be a quarter of a point rate hike. But it's by no means impossible that we could get another one coming in December. The Fed, I think, would like to get obviously at least one interest rate hike and probably two before the end of this year. That would not be a crisis for the stock market, but well, probably. I'll elaborate on that in a minute. I wonder if it's one of those sell the rumor, buy the news. In other words, people are taking some profits, opening some short positions on Wall Street on the basis that rate hike probably will come through and weigh on the market somewhat. It's possible, but overall, I would expect those choppy conditions to these choppy conditions to continue for a while longer in here. Could we get a bear market on Wall Street? Now, I think that's really very unlikely overall. A quarter, 2 quarters, or half a point interest rate hike, that's not going to make a big difference. Really, you can say, or I will say that I think the U.S. monetary conditions would still be far more attractive than we've seen in many other cycles at this stage. Inflation pressures are extremely low, and partly with the help of technologies overall. So I think choppy action, some downdrafts among individual shares, while recoveries are taking place in others, that's all part and parcel of the environment that we are quite likely to see. And we'll probably get a little more underperformance by Wall Street until at least we get into that year-end period starting in November. In this environment, again, I'll repeat this point on quantitative easing. I think that's going to be the most beneficial factor of all. People can argue all day long about the rights and wrongs of quantitative easing in terms of economies and economic growth. But what is a well-demonstrated fact is that QE is bullish for stock markets, and that's hardly surprising. So I think that means that Japan overall will be one of the top performers. I think India, while it's in a lengthy quiet period, which it's been in for quite some time, this is a lengthy consolidation of earlier strong gains. But I don't think there's too much downside risk, and the medium to longer term upside potential is very attractive. India doesn't have the QE, but it's got terrific government management, good corporate management in many sectors, probably the fastest growing economy in the globe right now. So I think that's an a very evaluations are improving while we're getting this lengthy ranging consolidation. So I think that will remain attractive. Again, I've already mentioned China. I think that the government money, which they're willing to throw at this market, will win out over the medium term. And that's a favorable factor. Europe, very favorable in terms of the quantitative easing. Those are the markets that I really like the most. What about all these resources producers? Well, they're cheap. They're very, very bombed out, but I think it's still too soon to expect any kind of significant recovery. Incidentally, on a point that I've mentioned before, that usually resources get a late run and become one of the best performing sectors at a time when stock markets generally are starting to top out. And they move up because they've been cheaper than everything else, and people see that. And also because global GDP growth is picking up, and demand for those resources is increasing. Now, we have not reached that point here at this stage, but if we were to move into some sort of bear market cycle for the major industrialized markets, without seeing that run to the upside by the resources sectors, that would be a first in my experience overall. So there are a lot of reasons I feel that we shouldn't be too worried about what's actually going on here in stock markets. The obvious points are: don't overpay for something, don't chase momentum trends, or if you do, use trailing stops, and so that you do get drawn out of those, you get shaken out of those positions when they finally lose their form. I'm very good at saying that. I'm less good at doing that myself in my own portfolio, but I don't want to digress too much on that point. But I will try to do as I say as well as we go forward here. So if something gets very overextended to the upside, that's a good time to start taking some profits. And what else to mention in here? I think I mentioned that we're in this choppy, difficult period here right now. That ends in October in all probability. Then you get that U.S. election factor is probably having quite a positive influence, and that will run throughout most of 2016. I think thereafter, an overall choppy environment would not be at all surprising. But I think that not that many bear markets, certainly among the developed markets, and certainly not among markets where we're seeing quantitative easing actually taking place. And I think over the longer term, the big decline that we have seen in resources sectors will be very, very bullish overall. I mean, look at the benefits of low crude oil production. We see endless articles talking about the problems for the producers of crude oil, but in terms of developed economies that have been struggling or had been struggling with oil well above $100 a barrel for a good many years, to see Brent crude here at $48.57 today, on the lower side of its trading range. I mean, my own view is it'll be difficult to get Brent crude above that $60-$70 region, and if it does happen on some very temporary, very bad news, that it's a spike that will probably not would probably be a spike that was not sustainable. beyond the short term. Now that's a huge benefit, really, for economies, economies generally. And plenty of other resources are also really quite cheap. That makes the resources sector a tricky investment vehicle at this stage. I think that the way to play it, if you're doing so at all, is with the very big companies that have the consolation of extremely attractive yields and also can ride out the loss of earnings due to low prices better than companies with less strong balance sheets overall. But that problem could easily drag on here for a while longer. All right. And on a longer term basis, you know my view, and I've been saying it for years, and we are I think really right on target here for a secular bull market over the next 20 years or longer. And the building blocks for that, or the support blocks for that, which I had mentioned, have mentioned over several years. One was cheaper oil in real terms. Well, we've certainly got that. And so lower energy prices generally. And that was certainly that was the byproduct of the accelerated rate of technological innovation. And that's the most important driver there, and companies are benefiting very much from that accelerated rate of technological innovation. The sector or people who don't benefit from it are in the employment fields, because there are not many jobs that cannot be replaced by increasingly smart machines. I mean, there will always be new jobs that are being created, but the process that this service has been forecasting, that I've been talking about for really several years, is that technologies were being developed so rapidly that jobs, new job creation, could not keep up with those changes. And so you would see more service, excuse me, more service jobs becoming available in restaurants, for instance, and in retail organizations, and that's been true. But a lot of white collar jobs have been replaced by technology, and that's a process that's going to continue overall. I don't have any doubt over the longer term that new jobs, more new jobs, will be invented, and that will not be hopefully a lasting problem in terms of decades, but it is a problem today, and I think it'll be a problem certainly in the immediate years ahead. But corporations in which we invest are major beneficiaries from that change. Okay, and just to quickly repeat those drivers of the secular bull market that I've been talking about for so long, they will be accelerated rates of technological innovation. One of the big benefits of that we see in energy prices, bringing about the lower cost energy that we now have, and I think we also see the rise in global middle classes around the world, and so markets are much bigger. This favors the corporate autonomies that this service so named and has favored again for a number of years. So it's an interesting and I think quite promising period, and it'll be vastly more profitable than that whole 2000 through 2009 period, which is so vivid in the memories of most investors today, and was so damaging and stressful. Okay, what about long-dated government bonds? Well, while there's no inflation and while stock markets are shaky in this period of seasonal underperformance, that's certainly helping to keep yields down. And I think we'll probably just see continued ranging here for the most part. My feeling is that that ranging is in yields, long-dated government bond yields, is a base-building process. It may continue for the lengthy medium term, but eventually, as global GDP growth picks up, and I think we're going to see some pickup in global GDP growth during the second half of this year. We'll see it in Europe. I think we'll see it in India. I hope we'll see some of it in the US, provided the dollar is not too strong. And we may even see some of it in China in terms of the news actually not being as bad as people actually feared. So I do expect somewhat better GDP growth, as I say, in the second half of the year. But we are obviously a very long way away from an overheating global economy, and that will remain the case really for quite some time, not least because of the low commodity prices and also the technological innovation that I have been talking about. What about currencies overall? Well, if the US is first to be raising interest rates among the highly developed economies, and I think we will get a rate hike in September and quite possibly another one in December. I think the UK is in a similar position. We will probably see a rate hike, but the UK can be a little bit more vulnerable against that background because its main business will remain with the European economies, and most of those are members of the European Union, and I think we'll probably see not a nose-diving euro by any means, but a generally soft euro. I mean, if you've got the US and the UK raising interest rates and they do not have QE, and Europe will not be raising interest rates anytime soon, and they do have QE, then that is going to mean that the euro is more likely than not to move a little lower. Against both sterling and also the US dollar. At least that would hardly be surprising. That can cause some competitive pressures for the UK overall. It also makes the EU good companies, good EU autonomies. It makes them extremely competitive overall. Now, what about other currencies? The mainly commodity exporting countries, their currencies have been absolutely hammered, and that's understandable given the huge declines in commodity prices that we've seen overall. I don't think that situation is going to change anytime soon. I think again, Japanese yen is likely to remain soft, not weak. And I put up a long-term 50-year chart of the yen against the dollar earlier in the week. I think it probably was a couple of days ago. But that just showed that although the yen has weakened considerably against the dollar over the last year, year or more, that that was occurring after a 40-year plus period of considerable yen strength overall. So just to put it in perspective, Japan needs a somewhat softer yen, and they're helping to create that environment. That's one of the reasons why the Japanese stock market's doing so well. Okay, now what about these commodities? And I have lots of questions on precious metals. My feeling is the lower they go, the more interesting they actually become. So I don't like them less. I get more interested, but I don't think that we are. Well, I'll put it this way. I think that first, they're in overall downward trends. They are somewhat oversold on a short-term basis. They show no evidence that they have seen climactic lows to date. Therefore, that does suggest that upside rallies probably be limited, to, and we're still actually looking for a bottom region somewhat lower. Usually, well, a good many bear markets, not least in commodities, can overshoot to the downside. I don't think we've seen much in the way of overshooting, although if any commodity, any precious metal rather, is overshooting, I would have to say that the candidate would be platinum, in the sense that it's closer to its 2008, fourth quarter 2008 lows than any of the other precious metals. So I think it's too soon to turn bullish. Anyone who disagrees with me and wants to be accumulating in these markets on a long-term basis at this stage, well, I can understand that view and approach, but I would not do it aggressively. I would be nibbling on weakness only. And in the event of a sharp rally, sudden sharp rally off a low, I would take the profit if you've been nibbling on weakness, because they'll come back and form, in all likelihood, base formations before a really sustainable recovery takes place in precious metals. So interesting. We should keep an eye on them. But I would not. Well, I find them resistible at this stage. Not irresistible, resistible. Other commodities. Well, they're awfully low. Agricultural commodities is really more a punt on what's going to happen with weather conditions overall. They have not been too bad generally, and they have been supportive. They've enabled prices to retrace rallies and trade at lower levels than for the second consecutive year, and that's a favorable factor overall. Industrial metals. Well, again, technology is a big factor in the low prices that we see today, because these leading mining companies can produce so much more efficiently. They've been steadily reducing their labor costs overall. Technology is so effective in locating the profitable ore bodies that they wish to develop and extract. And so that's helping to keep these resources prices lower than we have seen for a very long time, and also the expectation that China was going to hoover up every commodity that was produced has proved overly optimistic, not surprisingly. And so it's going to take it's going to take a long time, I think, before we get a significant recovery in these commodity prices. As a background factor for global GDP growth, that is favorable for developed economies, although not the commodity producing economies. And crude oil, last but not least, well, I talked about crude oil a little bit here overall. But let me just expand on that somewhat. I said earlier in this audio that it would be difficult for crude to get up above the $60-$70 level for any length of time. And I think the chances of crude oil getting anywhere close to that peak. What did we see? Crude oil, was it up at $143, $147? Depends on whether you're looking at the Brent or the WTI that we saw back in 2008. That's just not going to happen. That's in the history books. That was the final peak. We won't see anything like that ever again because it's too easy to produce more oil. All those forecasts of peak oil have proved to be wrong. And now we're also getting the natural gas, and that's becoming increasingly important, and probably become even more important than crude oil over the next decade. And we are also getting the solar-led renewables, which are very attractive. It's a favorable, those are favorable developments for long-term GDP growth and also stock market performance. And on that optimistic note, I will just wish you the best of possible weekends. Take care.